What's up, Wisconsin? I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. Happy Tuesday, everybody. We had a really provocative discussion yesterday that got into somewhat of what makes a good government official, what makes a good elected official. And so as I was thinking about today's show, I thought, well, why don't we talk about that? So I want to hear from each one of you. What makes a good elected official in your opinion? What do you look for? 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Now, if you've been listening for a little while, thank you, first of all. But you may know that I've worked at a lot of different levels in government, worked in government for a good long time. I was first coming out of law school, I clerked for Judge Michael Caney on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. Then I worked in the private sector in New York and abroad at really big law firms for a long time. And then I returned to public service and I worked for the city of Milwaukee and then Milwaukee County. In total, my years of working in government are nearly 15 in number. And while I haven't worked at the state level of government, I've worked in federal, municipal government at the city level, and then municipal government at the county level. And I've worked with many state officials over those 15 plus, or nearly 15 years, I should say. And so I was recently asked by a newly elected official, hey, Maggie, do you have any advice for me? And I thought that these two conversations about what do you think makes a good elected official, and this question that I'd recently been asked by a newly elected official, might make for an interesting discussion this afternoon. So please, I invite you in. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. What makes a good elected official in your opinion? And I think that there are a lot of ways to approach this, and I'll share with you some of what I think about this hour. But at a certain level, some of this can go back to basic poli-sci, right? If you took a poli-sci course back in undergrad, or even if your high school had something that started to explore civics and political science, one of the fundamental questions that you confront as you start to think about politics and those that run for elected office is, whose interests does that elected official represent? Now, the easy and short answer is constituents, but in what way? So again, on a really basic, what I'm going to call like poli-sci 101 level, there's a couple of basic frames that an elected official could adopt as they engage in policy debates and forward legislation themselves, or look at setting an agenda, or even a candidate in setting a platform. And the first one is that you're there simply to represent the majority of your constituents' preferences. So if you could have perfect polling of every single one of the people that are your constituents, not just the voters, not just those that voted for you, and you knew exactly what a majority of your constituents thought on any given policy, you would simply become a pass-through. You would cast a vote or propose legislation or support policy initiatives that simply reflected the majority of your constituents' viewpoints. A very kind of simplistic majoritarian approach. Now, there's a different approach that still focuses exclusively on your constituents. And that is what is in the best interests of the vast majority or the greatest number of your constituents. That's a little different, right? Because your constituents, a majority of them, could have a view, for whatever reason, that alpha policy is best. But you, and I'll talk more about how an elected official would inform this sort of a judgment, but you could come to a decision that policy beta will actually bring about more wellness, more wealth, if that's your thing, more jobs, better wages, whatever it is, that actually will serve the greatest number of your constituents in the best way. Those are two different approaches. A third approach is, regardless of what the first and second approach are, you could simply go there and try to see to it that legislation and policies are put into place that reflect your personal belief system. Now, of course, one could argue that when someone is a candidate, they should be clear about their personal belief system, their values, the things that they think are most important, so that their constituents understand what to expect. But we know that not every candidate tells us every nook and cranny of their belief system before they become an elected official. So there can be some differentiation between what may be the majority of your constituents' viewpoint or policy preference, a distinction between that and your beliefs. There could be a distinction between what's in the best interests of the greatest number of your constituents and your beliefs. The fourth way that you could view this is, I'm going to serve only those that vote in support of me. And that's a different subset of your constituents. Your constituents include everyone who exists in the jurisdiction that elected you, regardless of whether or not they voted for you. That formulation probably comes as close to, I'm going to do whatever I need to do to get reelected, as potentially the goal of an elected official. And of course, getting reelected may or may not align with what that person's personal beliefs are about what's best. Getting reelected may or may not align with what is in the best interests of the greatest number of their constituents. And it may or may not align, of course, with what the majority of your constituents' preferences might be. Because again, that's just focusing on those people that vote for you. Lastly, I think there's an approach that sort of looks at all of those things and says, all of these things matter. And so you try to effectively get a complicated Venn diagram going and target where the overlap of all those things are. But there's perhaps one final greater question. And that is the construction that approaches an elected official's job as not merely focused on your constituents, but focused on the entire jurisdiction. So let me use an example. You have someone on a village board. They're elected by some subset, some geographical smaller area within the entire village in some instances. Does that person serve just those individuals, or do they serve the entirety of the village? Now, in some jurisdictions, we have at-large village board members, and by definition, they do serve or do have constituencies that are the entirety of the jurisdiction. So let me use yet another example. If you're a state assembly person in the Wisconsin legislature, do you advance policies and support legislation or introduce legislation that only really benefits your constituents? Or do you look to the entirety of the state of Wisconsin? What's best for the state? Does that change from issue to issue? Now, the reality of the matter is most politicians don't ever think of things in this construct, right? It's sort of the formality of how political science may be taught at a university. But somewhere in there is an underlying philosophy. What am I here to do? What is the purpose that I serve as an elected official? And I think part of the dissatisfaction that we see growing nearly with every poll that's taken with elected officials is that more and more Americans, more and more Wisconsinites, believe that elected officials are simply there trying to get reelected. But what I would suggest to us this afternoon is that that's not actually true in equal measure, that there are ways to look at the effectiveness of an elected official. There are different approaches to try to distinguish between those elected officials who only really want to get reelected, which is, frankly, putting your personal preferences, your personal goals, ahead of what might be best for the public. To distinguish between those that are simply there to try to get reelected again and again and to wield the power and the prestige that accrues to them as elected officials, and those that actually are trying in some imperfect way to serve their constituencies and perhaps in its best construction to serve everyone that may be impacted by what legislation or public policies they support. And I truly believe that these are really important questions that would lead us to a way of analyzing or assessing candidates and the performance of various actors in government and government overall that would lead us to a place where we find out that we've got way more in common than we do that is different about us. Because most of us at the end of the day want the same things. We want government to be accountable and transparent and efficient. We want safety for our families. We want a job that pays a fair wage. We might even want to retire or take a little bit of a vacation. We want our parks to be accessible and beautiful and well-kept. We want our roads to be free of potholes and to get us where we want to go. So I don't think those things are the stuff that divides us. So what is it that an elected official is actually doing when they sort of talk political shop? What business is it of a local elected official, like a county board supervisor or a city alderman, to be adopting resolutions about the United States foreign policy when they have no control input over those things? And in large part, the federal government doesn't listen to what they're saying about them. So let's talk about that today. I want to hear from all of you. 855-752-4842. We're starting to see some texts come in. I'll get to those. And again, feel free to call in, but I'm going to go through a couple of the fundamental building blocks that I think when I've seen really effective elected officials, again, at multiple levels of government, based on my experience, these fundamental building blocks that I think make certain elected officials worthy of our praise, worthy of our votes, and truly effective in the best interests of each and every one of you and me. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. Join us, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. We'll be back in just a moment. Back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. Feel free to join us this afternoon. I'm talking about what do you think makes a great elected official? 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Jim from Appleton texting in, and he's got three things, which I find to be really interesting because I like to boil things down usually to three things too. So thanks, Jim from Appleton. He says, someone with consistent values, not someone that changes their values as they change the group that they are speaking to. I'd also call that integrity. Second, Jim offers, someone who presented with new provable information is not afraid to change their mind. Bravo, Jim. I couldn't agree more. I call that humility. And thirdly, Jim points out, someone who strives to communicate with their constituents and explain why they voted the way they did. Accessible, available, and understandable, right? I don't like it. I think one of the things that has prompted a lot of Donald Trump's fandom is that he doesn't talk in the way that politicians usually talk, right? Which is kind of, I don't know. It's like politicians speak. You ask them a direct question, they answer some other question that you didn't ask. Oftentimes, they seem to be hedging a lot. And I think people don't like that. They want to hear directly. They want to hear in language that is the way that we all talk to one another. And so I think Jim's hit on something really important. Someone who strives to communicate with their constituents and explain why they voted the way they did. I'd add to that in a way that's understandable, approachable, accessible to their constituents. I'm going to be joined at the top of the hour by a newly elected Common Council member for the City of Milwaukee, Peter Bergelis. Peter and I had the opportunity to work together because he was a county board supervisor for the last 2 years before he ran for the Common Council. One of the things maybe I'll talk with Peter a little bit about is one of the objectives I had in my limited role at the county was to give legal advice to elected officials in a way that was understandable for them. I mean, what good is legal advice if you don't understand what the heck your lawyer is saying? I think the same goes for politicians and elected officials. If you can't really understand what the heck the politician is saying or why they've taken that position, if they talk in riddles and rhymes and misdirection and sort of this, I don't know, politicians speak, it's not helpful to people. And so I think, again, in there is one of the reasons that I believe Donald Trump is popular, because he says things plainly. And I think politicians would do well, no matter what your political preferences are, liberal, conservative, MAGA, Democratic, independent, to speak more clearly to people, so that folks can understand what it is that you support and why you support it and why you voted the way that they did. Thank you, Jim from Appleton. Please keep listening and texting. If you want to join our conversation, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Question of the hour is, what makes a great elected official? What are the sorts of qualities that we want in our elected officials? And this isn't partisan at all. It has nothing to do with somebody's politics, meaning Democrat, Republican, MAGA, whatever it is. This is just, hey, I can look at certain Republicans over the course of my lifetime that I think were very good to excellent elected officials, not because I believed in all the policy positions they took, but because I could see some of these characteristics, some of these values that Jim is talking about: integrity, consistency, humility to change their position on things when provided with contrary yet reliable data and information. So a couple of the things that may seem really kind of in the weeds and boring, I hate to be boring, but I got to bring up these two things. And that is that elected officials, whether they work in the executive branch of government as the chief executive officer or a part of the legislature, and even those that are elected into the judiciary, as we do here in the state of Wisconsin, an absolutely critical element for an elected official to be successful, to be effective, is that they must understand the budgeting process. Government budgeting is not interesting. No one willingly goes to continuing education sessions about government budgeting because it's just not interesting. It's oftentimes grinding and technical. But fundamentally, if an elected official doesn't understand the budgeting or the appropriations process, they won't understand how to legislate or set policy in the most effective way. Now, they can have assistance with that, legislative aides, different budget analysts, and that's fine and good. But ultimately, the elected official has a responsibility to fundamentally understand how the budgeting process works, how the appropriations process works, how the release of funds work. And that then ties into my second must-have for an effective government official or elected official. And that is, they've got to understand ethics. When I say government ethics, everybody, oh, that's a groan. Oh, haha, politicians. No. I mean this very literally. For every single person that works in any governmental office, whether elected or not, there is a set of ethics rules that apply to them. And they can get really technical. Like, oh, if the dinner that you receive is over $50 in value and you don't pay for it, you have to report that on your annual statement of economic interests. It's within these very sometimes technical, boring rules of ethics that we find the most basic of guidance for people in positions of authority and power. You need only think of what's gone on with Clarence Thomas over the last 2 years to understand the importance for people in positions of power, and especially elected officials, to understand ethical rules. And certainly not just to understand them, but to follow them. Not in a technical check the box sense, but to follow them both in the letter and the spirit of the ethical rule. To not say, oh, I didn't know that it didn't mean that when I stay at luxury resorts, that's not really included in my gift disclosures. I mean, that's absurd. Any reasonable person would understand that that should be something that is disclosed. I don't know why Clarence Thomas didn't. I mean, one can hazard a guess. And if you don't know, why wouldn't you err on the side of including it? Now, ethics is broad. It covers all kinds of things, not just about gifting, but about conflicts of interest. And here again, we see where there are deep problems for some government actors and elected officials. So we'll get back to this after the farm update at the bottom of the hour, but I want to hear from you. What do you think makes a great elected official? I've got a whole set of other ideas about it, which I want to share with you, but we'll keep talking about that idea of ethics and conflicts of interest and gifting, and what does all of that really mean in practice? I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Network. We'll be back after your farm update. Join us, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Welcome back, Wisconsin. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. I'm Maggie Dawn. We're talking this hour about what do you think makes a great elected official or even a great candidate? Now, someone really smart once said that campaigning is poetry, but governing is prose. What they mean to say by that is sometimes the best candidates don't always make the best elected officials. In other words, the skill sets that may make someone an incredibly effective campaigner aren't necessarily the same skill sets that make someone a great elected official. Frankly, I agree. It's a trick to be a really good elected official. We were talking a little bit about ethics. And the ethics aren't just about what the technical rules are, of course. It's a broader meaning. And oftentimes I would provide legal advice to clients when I worked in government, and I would say, here's a good barometer. If you wouldn't want to explain what you're doing to your mother, or you wouldn't want to see it talked about on the front page of the newspaper, probably shouldn't be doing it. But that doesn't quite capture all of it. And unfortunately, it's been my experience that a lot of elected officials don't really have a good sense about where their lane is. And so that gets me to this third idea that I think is absolutely essential for all government officials. And that is, do you understand basic civics? Do you understand the three branches of government? But not just that. But do you understand the relationships and the varying jurisdictions between what the federal government does, what a state government does, and what local governments have the power to do, and sometimes, more importantly, what local governments do not have any authority over? And it's the intersection of those two things, and I think a lot of elected officials get into hot water when they don't understand what their lane is, both within a separation of powers question, but also within what level of government am I in? What does my level of government have authority to do or not do? And then there's just the plain old pay to play. And boy, have we set up a terrible system. If we wanted a system, a governmental system, where the odds that an elected official would be beholden to someone that is paying them off, then corporations wouldn't be people and money wouldn't be speech. We'd do it like nearly all other Western democracies do, and there would be a specific limited time period for campaigning, and campaigns would be publicly funded. Not a penny of private money would be allowed in campaigns. Wouldn't that change the entire contour of how we view our elected officials? Wouldn't it change the entire way that campaigns happen? We wouldn't get pelted with all of those pretty stupid campaign ads for months leading up to an election. There would be potentially required debates where the two candidates over the publicly owned and enjoyed airwaves would have a debate. We don't have that system here. We have a system where so much money floods into elections in so many different ways that I think most Americans just have this baseline assumption that any one of their elected officials is to an extent influenced by, at the most benign, and some people would say completely bought and paid for by special interests. Now, here's a little bit of a reality. I've seen this move over time to elect people that are independently wealthy, very, very, very rich people. Now, I don't really assume that rich people know anything about what it's like to be a regular person and hold a normal job, because most of them don't. But here's the other thing, I think a misconception about extremely wealthy people that run for public office. I think a lot of Wisconsinites and Americans think, oh, well, they can't be bought and paid for because they already have a ton of money. But here's the reality. Most really, really wealthy people running for office don't want to spend their own money running for office anyways. They'd rather keep their own money in their pocket. They don't become rich spending money they don't have to. So while many very wealthy people may loan their campaigns money, they often will pay themselves back by fundraising throughout the course of their campaign and afterwards. Jeff from Shorewood texting in, geez, Mags, no money in elections? Do you think elected officials have anything to do with election administration and campaign finance laws? Of course, Jeff is correct. That's part of the problem. The very people who have been the winners of this system, that is the elected officials, are the ones that we're looking to take the money out of politics that worked so well for them to get them elected in the first place. Part of ethics, I think, for elected officials is the integrity piece. Jim earlier from Appleton texting in about that very thing. And integrity shows up in a lot of ways and forms, but one of the most basic things that I think we should always ask of our elected officials, not frankly ask, demand, is that elected officials do not intentionally lie to us. Wouldn't that be something? Now, I know some people are probably yelling at their radios or saying, what are you talking, all politicians lie, that's what politics is. Yeah, it's not. Not all politicians lie in the same way, at the same levels, about the same things of the same level of importance or with the same frequency. So like the not lying, don't intentionally misrepresent things. And that's the corollary to, of course, don't make promises you can't keep or that you know require compromise or the cooperation of other branches of government that you don't control. Because I think that is also what has made people so cynical today. Understandably so, of course. Why should I trust politicians? They all lie, which is not true. And why should I trust politicians? Because they all promise that they'll do all these things and none of them ever follow through. That's why I always say it's really important to look at what a candidate says and try to stack that up against what did they actually accomplish. And if politicians are promising you things and introducing legislation that never gets adopted, then that's a version of lying to you. We need more kept promises to help restore faith in some of these institutions and elected officials. We need politicians to be more honest about what's actually achievable so that, frankly, as voters, we have realistic expectations. And what's actually achievable should require compromise with people that a politician doesn't necessarily agree with. That's a democratic system. That's the system we've got. If you want unilateral control over every element and every lever of government, that's not democratic. That's autocratic. And by the way, that's one of the things that makes me so concerned about Project 2025 from the Heritage Foundation. What Project 2025 effectively suggests is all of the practical implications of the, quote, unitary executive theory, which is, again, fancy baloney words to say that the executive branch of government, the president of the United States, can do and should be able to do nearly anything he wants. And anybody that stands in his way within the executive branch of government should be fireable at will by the president so that he can exert his political will across the spectrum. Diminishes the role of Congress, and it diminishes the role of the courts. That ain't democracy. Compromise is what democracy is about. A texter from the 608 sharing that we should look to the Australian rules on elections. They got it going on. Yeah, they sure do. They limit money. They limit the time that people can campaign. Their elections are publicly funded. And you still see wildly different kinds of politicians with different political leanings. Lots of different stuff happening in Australia. It doesn't tamp down the disagreement. It focuses the disagreement on actual issues. And all else being equal, there will just be less corruption in government. The next sort of category of stuff that I wanted to talk about, that at least based on my nearly 15 years of working in government, my experience has taught me, is that there is a big difference between politicians who proclaim certainty versus politicians who are innately curious. There's an innate difference between politicians who approach policy, big policy questions, with humility rather than hubris. What I mean by all of that to say is, as Jim from Appleton pointed out earlier, don't we all deserve elected officials who want to hear opposing viewpoints, who are curious about what actually may work for a given problem or challenge in our society? What might actually make things better for the middle class, that want objective data, not just data that's frankly generated from a results-based perspective by a partisan think tank, but objective data. That's the curious part. Elected officials that actually want to learn about these various policies and bits of legislation, that will seek out experts, independent, objective experts, to try to inform their decision-making, that will do homework, that will actually study these issues, not just take what an interest group or a lobbying group hands them as legislation and say, aye, aye, Captain, thanks for your campaign donation, I'll go introduce this, without reading it, without understanding it, without studying the topic one bit. And And here's the other part of that. Any politician that tells you that all we have to do to solve this pernicious, persistent public policy question is XYZ, I am the one that has the answer. It's so simple. They're lying to you. Like, that just can't be true. I'd very humbly offer that all the easy problems have been fixed. That's the low-hanging fruit. All we've got left in government are complicated, difficult questions where there's not one value at play, where there's two values at each side of the argument that are at odds. So any politician that tells you they've got the answer and it's just this simple fix, that's a lie. I also want elected officials that are willing to demand data and willing to demand data and reports from agencies of government, from the government itself, that are understandable and that they themselves, the politician, the elected official, actually read some of and themselves endeavors to understand. We're going to take a couple of quick messages, but when we come back, I'm going to tell you the two most important things that I think we should demand, that you and I should demand of every candidate and every elected official. Because this is the stuff that ends up mattering a lot. So don't go anywhere. If you want to join us, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. When we come back, I'm going to tell you the two most important things that I think every elected official must understand in order to be effective. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. If you want to join us, we're talking about what makes a great elected official this hour. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. I've been going through a whole bunch of different ideas, and I will summarize them all before we get out of the hour. And you're not going to want to go anywhere because I've got a special guest joining me at the top of the hour, new common council member for the city of Milwaukee, Peter Bergelis. And at the bottom of the next hour, I'm going to be talking about how completely freaked out I am about at least one of the judicial appointment wish lists that Donald Trump might have if he gets reelected. Frightening. So we'll get to that as well. But I promised you all before our last break that I would talk about the two things that I think all elected officials must possess in order to be great, in order to be effective. And I don't care in this discussion about what their policies or their political leanings might be. The first of those two most important things is that an elected official has to understand in a really deep way that the people that they end up hearing from and seeing, the people that lobby them, whether formal lobbyists or that get them on the phone and all those things, all those people likely have a fair amount of privilege. Privilege that allows them the time and the day to find their phone number or their email and call them. Privilege in the day that allows them the time away from work or childcare responsibilities to show up at a hearing and hold a sign. For every single person or interest group that an elected official hears from, there are hundreds, if not thousands, if not tens of thousands of people that they will never hear from directly, that will never contact them. It's the great silent majority of Americans. There's something like, and Calvin, I can't remember the exact number off the top of my head, but every presidential election cycle, there's almost as many Americans that don't vote than there are Americans that vote for either party's candidate. So what I mean to say by all of that is there is privilege in access. There's privilege in being able to devote time to call up a senator or congressman or mayor or elected official. And most folks that are working the hardest with the most jobs and the most responsibilities and kids to take care of and maybe no reliable transportation, they don't have time to call an elected official's office. And so the idea, the very humble idea that access usually connotes some kind of privilege and that interest groups are interest groups and they have an agenda. So the very simple humility that there are so many people that an elected official will never, ever hear from. And so that brings us back to where we began this discussion, which is, what is this elected official's objective? Whom is it that they are trying to serve? Is it to improve the quality of life for the greatest number of people in the jurisdiction as a whole that they serve? Or is it simply to get reelected? Is it simply to serve the voters that voted for them? And the last thing that I think is most important for every elected official is they have to know from the minute they decide to run for their first public office, what their fundamental core values and issues are. Those things should never change. At max, I think you can have three. And those are the things that you go to the mat on, the values that you build your entire political life around. And while your opinion about them may change because, you know, you get new information, new data, there's new science, you talk to a more knowledgeable expert, the values, the things that you want to build your political life around, you got to know what those are, because otherwise you'll end up trying to be everything to everybody, or you'll try to tick every box on your political party's wish list. And that won't work for you as an elected official or the people that you swear an oath to serve. Dave from Madison, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show. What do you have to say this afternoon?
Too much to say, so I'm just going to keep my comment brief and reduce it down to one topic, really. Oh, well, as far as values, though, I want to say I think it's better to have someone who's willing to modify his view on values. You know, Joe Biden was a very, very conservative Democrat, and I was really upset that he won in the primaries. But he changed his values on a lot of things, and that made him a wonderful and great president.
Now, Dave, I'm going to just jump in here because I want to clarify something. What I said was you can change your mind on the policies or the legislation or the way that you pursue something, but that the underlying value is actually consistent over the period of time. So what I mean is the why is consistent, that elected official's why is consistent, but the what and the how may change over their political lifespan, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah, well, no, I think that everyone has good intentions, whether they're on the right or left, but the road to hell is paved by good intentions. I do want to say also, I want to make a comment on, you know, the tension between getting reelected and doing what's right. You know, if you don't get reelected, your opponent's going to be elected. And the policies that he's going to institute, or she is going to be, could be a lot worse. This happened during the Clinton administration, where Clinton, prior to his reelection campaign, you know, was faced with signing the AFTC bill, you know, the welfare reform bill, the crime bill, prison litigation reform act, these things. And if he would not have signed those horrible, horrible bills, Bob Dole would have won. And the legislation that would have passed under him that he would have signed would have been a lot worse. But thank God Bill Clinton was elected. But it involved a lot of sacrificing. And that sacrifice, you know, you have to be pragmatic. If you're not, your opponent will get elected.
I agree with Dave here. I'm going to make a distinction, though. Compromise and pragmatism is one thing, but naked pursuit of re-election is another. So is the conflation of what's in my best interest with what's in the public's best interest. Top of the hour, news, weather, and sports are next. And then we'll be joined by my special guest, Common Council member Peter Bergelis. Thanks, y'all. Thanks, Dave. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Network.